That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to The Window, the best podcast on the international football / soccer that there is. And I am your host, Joe, and I'm joined as ever by your other host, Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm good, Joe. I'm excited to talk about the international window this September. The summer's been too long, and I'm ready to get into it.
Yes, it has been a long summer. It has been a long time since we recorded an episode. This is going to be a bumper show. It's probably going to stretch over an hour for sure. We've got a lot to go through. There's been a lot that's happened. We've got player moves to discuss. We've got World Cup rosters to discuss. We've got nation tournaments to discuss. I mean, there's so much new coaches, and I mean, it's insane. So a very, very exciting time. And I'm just really stoked that the international window is here.
So. I couldn't agree more. And it's you truly have everything. You've got European qualifying, you've got AFCON qualifying, you've got the CONCACAF Nations League, you've got World Cup qualifying starting for 2026. Yep. You got friendlies, there are draws taking place. It is an exciting time to be focused on international football, and September is going to be a great month. There's so much going on, and really excited to talk to you about it.
Yes, I feel like this window gets a lot of flack because it's kind of sandwiched in between the start of the season for a lot of leagues, and you know, people are just getting into the flow with their club.
Yep.
And then we take this break. But personally, this is one of my favorite windows. I think it's fantastic to just, you know, start diving right back into it. And yeah, so it's going to be good. So speaking of that, we're going to dive into Asia first. And to start things off, recently announced, I think maybe a week ago, Saudi Arabia has finally settled on their new coach. And that is Roberto Mancini, who was the former Italy coach. I think that's an interesting appointment. I will be very interested to see how that pans out, because he is someone who's used to working with players that are perhaps of a maybe higher quality. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds bad. And obviously the Saudi league has been making waves across the globe this transfer this summer. And so, yeah, I'll be curious to see what he can do with the team, if he can do anything different than Irv Renard did, who obviously left kind of randomly actually to take up the French women's team squad. But yeah,
it was quite something at the World Cup, them defeating Argentina, and you kind of felt like Irv Renard was their guy, and that is no longer the case. So I agree. I think it'll be interesting to see how this team does. They're playing against Costa Rica and South Korea in England. They're playing two friendlies this window. I'm really curious to see, you know, we've talked about Saudi Arabia a lot and how most of their players, in fact, I believe all their players are domestic based. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see what happens with Saudi Arabia and their league. And I don't know what their qualification is really like, but a lot of other nations have added players that have said, hey, you know, you've played in this league for years and years, they've become naturalized citizens, and now you're eligible to represent the national team. I'm curious to see if that's the route that Saudi Arabia is thinking. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, they're bringing so many players over there. Maybe that's in their future.
That is an interesting point, and I have not thought of that. So yeah, you raise a really interesting point. I personally think, at least at the moment, I'm kind of against it, if I'm being mm-hmm. honest. Like,
yeah,
like something about that just doesn't sit right to me. Like, it just seems
I
kind
would
of
agree.
It seems like you're kind of like tricking the system a little bit, but
Yeah.
on the flip side, and maybe that's partly because Saudi Arabia does have an established league that is semi-decent, and you know that they do have clubs that have a youth system that can bring in players. Whereas you look at a country like Hong Kong, for example, right? Very limited resources. Like they really have to adapt. And so when they naturalize some Brazilian players, which they have done, and that Brazilian player was called up for this window, by the way, to represent Hong Kong, it's not quite as unnerving to me as maybe what you're suggesting. So
yeah, and I maybe that doesn't happen. I think there's also a benefit in that even if they don't go that route, the Saudi players, they're playing against better competition on a day-to-day basis by bringing players into the league. All of a sudden, these players that are all domestic-based, they're playing against mostly Saudi players. Now there are a lot better players in the league and better competition. And maybe there's also some of that the hope is that they start, you know, playing against better competition to hopefully build up their player base as well. I think that's probably more likely.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a worthy, I think a worthy goal as well. And that was my initial thought when I started seeing all this is, you know, oh, well that could, you know, if it ups the quality of the league, then hopefully that ups the standard of the player. Right. And as you alluded to, so yeah. So interesting things going on in Saudi Arabia. I guess another note too is they, and this will piggyback off of another country too, being Iran. So both Saudi Arabia and Iran received clearance today, in fact, that they can now play matches in their home country, which is huge. They were not able to do this. They had to go play on neutral grounds, both Saudi Arabia and Iran. And they don't have to do that anymore. The AFC announced that they can host games now. So
yeah, and Iran will host their first game on the 12th of September. They're hosting Angola and Tehran. So we will see them host very soon.
Yes, yes. Another Asian country that I briefly wanted to highlight is South Korea. And obviously, we talked a little bit about them last time because they now have Jurgen Klinsmann as their coach. And it looks like he's been scouting Kim Ji-soo, who is now applying his trade at Brentford. He got the first call up this window for them. So, you know, maybe we'll see him take the pitch and start playing for South Korea. Decent player playing in the Premier League is no small feat and probably a deserved call up. I did also want to mention a player that I think has been performing very well is Lee Hanbaum. He plays for FC Midtjylland in Denmark, and he was not called up this window. I think he's actually coming off an injury. That might be part of it. So he might not be fully fit, which could be part of the issue. But that's another name for people to kind of watch out for because he's started very well in Denmark this season. So.
And South Korea, again, will play Saudi Arabia, as we just mentioned, and they are also at Wales and Cardiff on the 7th. So the Brentford man will not have to travel too far to play his first games for his country.
Yes, which you can't always say, right? Because a lot of times the South Koreas, the Japans, those players end up having to leave, you know, wherever they're playing in Europe and fly all the way over to Asia because oftentimes their friendlies are hosted in their home country, which is long travel. So, that's kind of a nice little change.
For
once for those players. So
absolutely.
Similarly, Iraq is a team that I'm also kind of keeping an eye on, and I think they're developing into a punchy little team. They've got several players that ply their trade in Sweden. It must be some sort of refugee or something like that in Sweden with Iraqi players, because there's actually quite a few throughout the whole ranks of clubs in Sweden. In fact, there's a club, they just got relegated down to the third tier, but they're called Dalkurd, and they're actually Like that's kind of what they're known for, is like Iranian or Iraqi, like Middle Eastern players, like bringing them through. So anyways, that being said, there are two players that I thought it was just kind of funny. I wanted to mention that they ended up playing each other this weekend in Sweden. That was also Nadi and Alomari. And they were both called into the squad. One plays for Halmstad and one, I can't remember who the other one plays for, but anyways, there are players for Iraq that are starting to really play over in Europe. And I think that's a step up in quality. Another player I would highlight is his last name is Iqbal. I'm spacing on his first name at the moment, but he is a player that I think a lot of people have talked a lot about. He went through the Man U system, or at least he played for the under 23s, and he's now at FC Utrecht in the Netherlands. And he didn't come off this last weekend, but he's a very creative midfielder, definitely a talent, and definitely a name that people should be watching out for Iraq. So I think Iraq has some fun things that are happening at the moment. And it's going to be fascinating to watch them both in the Asian Cup, but also in World Cup qualifying, yes. Which brings us to that. So the Asian Cup is going to take place in January. But before that, starting next month, Asian World Cup qualifying gets underway. The draw has been made since we recorded last. So the preliminary round kicks off in October. And yeah. It looks very exciting. I think we're gonna dive more in depth into that probably next month. But Brandon, any thoughts on that?
I think people don't realize exactly how many teams Asia is actually going to get into the World Cup. So with the expansion from 32 to 48, a lot of different confederations received more places in the finals. The Asian Football Confederation is one of them. And their final round actually is 9 groups. And they are going to get 8 direct slots. I'm sorry, it's 8 groups, 9 groups. It is 9 groups. So there are 8 direct spots. 1 playoff spot, but they're going to get at least 8 teams into the World Cup. So I think we've talked about a lot in the past how Asia's top heavy. You look at Japan, Iran, Australia, South Korea, Saudi Arabia. Those 5 teams have really been towards the top. And Qatar is in between, I think. I think you could argue they belong in that top tier, but Asia is getting more than that into the 26th World Cup. They're going to get at least 2 more teams. So you start looking down the list at who's next. Is it Iraq? Is it UAE? Is it Oman? Uzbekistan, China, Jordan, Bahrain? You know, at least two teams from that group are going to get it into the World Cup, guaranteed. So I think Iraq is definitely a team that, you know, you were talking a little bit about before. They're a team that has been up in our rankings for quite some time, and we've liked them. They haven't really broken through that top tier, but they may not need to actually get to the World Cup. So I think Asian qualifying more so than it has been in since I can remember, in at least probably 4 or 5 qualifying cycles, at least. I think a lot of teams have a better chance to qualify than they ever have, and I think it's going to make Asian qualifying that much more exciting. I think in the past, you kind of knew what was going to happen for the most part. I don't feel that way this time around.
Yeah, it does leave a little bit of mystery, which is a good thing, as you're saying. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And yeah, we'll go into this next month a little more, but some of the groups do look quite interesting. You know, as you already mentioned, and I mentioned as well, Iraq, right? But they're in a group with Vietnam, the Philippines, and then one of the winners from the prelim round, right? And that's a very manageable group for them.
Yep.
I think Thailand has an interesting opportunity. They're in Group C with Korea and China, but China has not looked good now for a while.
Yep.
And Thailand has. as well as Group D would be the only other one, at least right now, that I would highlight, right? They're in a group with Oman and Kyrgyzstan, or the Kyrgyz Republic, and then Malaysia. And I'm still a little high on Malaysia. I'm kind of excited by I think this is a good opportunity for them to reach the next round. So
I very much agree. And it'll be interesting because not only do they have this round, but then the top two teams from each group get through. Mm-hmm. So they could be basically in the final round of qualifying for the World Cup. Yeah. And I don't think anybody would be super surprised by that. So I'm really looking forward to Asian qualifying this time around. I do think it would be very difficult for some of those top teams to miss out. There are just too many opportunities to qualify, and those teams are, I think, just too good. But
yeah.
There are going to be some surprises, and I think when the final field is set, you're going to look at a couple of these teams that we talk a little bit more about in October, and you're going to see them there at the finals in 2026.
Yeah. And just briefly before we move on from Asia, going back to the preliminary round, which is what takes place next month, to kind of kick it off, you know, you've got the likes of Afghanistan and Singapore and, you know, Hong Kong, Indonesia, Pakistan, right? You and I were kind of talking about this before we started recording, but you know, these are great ties. Like, you know, like for a lot of these countries, like this is it. Like, they won't make it much further than this. And so, you know, for what defines success for them in World Cup qualifying is to make it into the next round. And for some of these countries, like, you know, if they can get a result, it makes it so much fun. So
absolutely. I'm looking forward to talking about those next month. And as you mentioned, there's 10 ties that are going to take place in October, and it's a home and away and over 5 days. And for 10 teams, that will be the end of their World Cup qualifying for 2026 next month. So we haven't even started, and by next month, 10 teams are already going to get eliminated. So
I know, isn't it crazy?
It is.
So speaking of World Cup qualifying, there is another confederation that is launching into that this window, which we are rubbing our hands about. We're very excited, and that would be CONMEBOL, South America. And World Cup qualifying is here. Are you? I'm sure you're as excited as I am.
I am. It's a bit of a loaded question because while I am extremely excited about World Cup qualifying, I think CONMEBOL is probably the one I'm least excited for, just because so many teams make it. And that feels not ideal, but I am excited. I think there's not going to be as much drama as we were discussing this past window, where we're talking about Uruguay and Ecuador and Peru, and does Bolivia have an outside chance? I think it's going to lack some drama, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think that CONMEBOL is never short of drama. So whether that's
fair
on the field or off the field, I mean, we're already having off the field drama with Brazil and Anthony, and you know, we'll touch on that here in a second, because we're gonna comb through these teams and just kind of talk about each one a little bit. We'll do it in alphabetical order. We'll just start at the top.
I just want to clarify. I think there will be drama still. I don't think there won't be drama. I think it's going to be in a different spot, though, because in the past qualifying, you kind of had one or two teams, and early in qualification, you're like, okay, you know, they're just too far behind. They're not going to make it. You're focused more in the middle of the table. And maybe there is some drama at the top. I think this is going to be a little bit different. I think the first maybe three or so teams, maybe three or four teams, I think are going to qualify pretty safely. That's not where the drama is going to be. There's still going to be drama amongst, you know, teams 6, 7, 8, 9, and maybe teams stay in it longer here. You're not eliminated really until much later in the process because of how many teams qualify. So I think there will be drama. It's just going to be a different kind of drama.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. And I agree with you. It's just set up different because of the added spots for, for qualifying, right?
Let's talk about some of the teams.
Yeah, let's do it. I am in the process of trying to, there we go. That's what I was looking for. Sorry. All right, yeah, we'll start at the top in alphabetical order. We'll go with Argentina first. So they face Ecuador at home on the 7th, and then they are away to Bolivia on the 12th. So those are their two fixtures. Ecuador could be a bit tricky, but I think Bolivia is at altitude, obviously, and that's always a tricky thing.
Yeah.
For Argentina, there's not much to say, honestly. The squad is still completely stacked. This is the defending World Cup champions. Messi is still there. Yep. He is making huge waves here in Major League Soccer on a lot of different fronts. He was just in LA for a game yesterday, and like the stars were out. Like it was unbelievable. The celebrities that were at that game.
A 2-page list of celebrities that were there.
Yeah, completely insane. And then he was actually here in Cincinnati, a couple weeks ago for the U.S. Open Cup, which is kind of the equivalent to like the FA Cup, maybe, for those who are wondering. Yeah. This team is just completely stacked. They even brought in four new players, and it's still like ridiculous. So the four uncapped players that they brought in are Alan Velasco, who's actually playing his trade in MLS at FC Dallas, Lucas Beltran, who's playing at Fiorentina, Lucas Esquivel, and Bruno Zappelli, at Atletico Paranaense. And yeah, some quality additions. Velasco's had a good season for FC Dallas. That's obviously why he's got the call. Beltran, I think, is a name that people were clamoring for a while to get a call in. I think Argentina has everything they need to get started off on a really solid footing.
I would agree. I think the one thing that's a little unique this time around, which you're alluding to, here as well. Typically, the World Cup is in June. You're going to have at least a year to a year and a half minimum before the next World Cup qualifying cycle starts. Here, you only have 9 months. That's it.
Yep.
And it's actually even a little bit less than 9 months since the World Cup ended that the next World Cup cycle is starting. So inherently, there's not a ton of turnover within these teams yet, whereas typically you might see a longer time period. Some of those players that, you know, thought were at their end of their career or maybe done with the international team, may have moved on. It doesn't really feel like that's the case here, because the time window between the end of the last World Cup and the start of this cycle is just too small. So I think from my perspective, it still feels like the teams that were good are still good, and that isn't really changing yet.
I completely agree, and yeah, it's just, I think they're just really set up very well to just kind of continue where they left off in the World Cup, right?
Yep.
So
we ran some numbers just before this recording to take a look at CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, and it's looking good for Argentina, believe it or not. we give them a 99.56% chance to qualify directly. So something that the top six qualify automatically. For Argentina to finish seventh or below, I don't know what would have to happen, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, like the country would basically have to be like nuked.
Yeah,
we don't want that to happen, obviously.
We definitely do not want that.
No, yeah, but
there's too much talent in Argentina for them to miss out.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll leave Argentina there. We'll move on. We're going to talk about Bolivia now. So Bolivia is one of these countries that, historically speaking, at least in recent times, they're kind of a cellar dweller in terms of CONMEBOL and qualifying, right? And, you know, they realize that. And I think that might be part of the reason why they called in a 48-man squad for this window, which is completely insane. The vast majority of them are domestic players, right? There's a few who are applying their trade in Europe, but only a few, and we're talking like maybe three. So Boris Cespedes, he's playing in Switzerland with Verden Sport. I mean, Efrain Morales, he's playing with the second team at Atlanta United over here. And then Roberto Fernandez, he's playing in Russia, in Kaliningrad for Baltica. And the rest of them are all playing in either South America or, Juanmi Cuellar, I guess, is another one. He's playing for Barcelona's B team, I think. Barcelona Athletic. Yeah. Anyways.
Yep. And the Bolivian League is not known as one of the stronger South American leagues.
That's correct. Yes. Historically, I guess, at least as long as I've paid attention to the Libertadores, which is obviously the South American Champions League, Bolivian teams have really, really struggled.
Yes.
The strongest a few years ago put together an amazing run. I think they reached maybe like the quarters or the semis or something like that. But that was kind of an exception. So what we're saying is, are things going to change? That is the question. Will things change for Bolivia for qualifying? Will they finally get back to World Cup now that there's expanded spots?
Well, starting against Brazil and Argentina is not the best way to change that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a brutal start to qualifying. Absolutely brutal. And I agree with you. I think having looked at the squads and where they're at, and obviously things can change. Qualifying is a very long process.
Yes.
You know, we're talking what, 18 games for these countries in South America. You know, it's a long process, but I just don't see anything from Bolivia that really is telling me that that's going to change.
Yeah. I am not optimistic on Bolivia. I expect them to finish bottom of the table. They finished second from bottom in 22 World Cup qualifying. But I don't know. I really struggle to see Bolivia doing enough to get to at least that playoff spot, let alone one of those direct qualifying spots.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be an uphill battle for them for sure. And, and obviously, as we've mentioned many times, they'll have to take advantage of the fact that, you know, they can play at altitude. Right.
Yep.
And so they need to really focus on winning their home games, but it's really tough when you're, you know, when you're hosting the defending world champions.
Absolutely.
And so that's I guess that's Bolivia in a nutshell. I don't have too much more to say. So we'll move down to Brazil. And Brazil, I think I think in the end for Brazil, I think it was a disappointing World Cup. I don't know if I want to necessarily go back and rehash that, but this is it's a new cycle. But similar to Argentina, it doesn't necessarily feel like that, right? Like there's still a lot of the same faces. In this window in particular, Vinicius Jr. is not there. He got injured with Real Madrid. So that's a big loss, but there's plenty of talent to come in and take his place, such as Gabriel Jesus, who was announced today that he's got the call up. He's returning back to the Brazil squad, and he's actually been called in place of Anthony, who we won't go into too much detail, but there's some allegations or something of that nature around him, which are ugly and disappointing. But yeah, other than that, Brazil, extremely, extremely stacked squad again. And if they're not second to Argentina, they'll probably be first to them. Like I think those two are yep. again, favorites to go 1-2.
I would agree. I think I would be shocked if it's not Brazil, Argentina, 1-2 in some order.
Yeah. I did also want to mention that I think that this is a qualifying campaign. They still don't have a head coach. they just have a caretaker coach in Fernando Diniz. And so I don't know who they're looking at. They're taking their sweet time to get that coach into place. But yeah, that is the jury's still out on who exactly that's going to be. So
I think they're one of those teams that, they're not really playing for qualifying. I think they're playing the longer game. Mm-hmm. And I think they're okay. I don't really think they're concerned at all about qualifying. So I think ultimately they're thinking long term. They're thinking Copa America. They're thinking World Cup 2026. And, we're in September 2023 now. What is the likelihood that some of these managers are still with the national team 3 years from now? That's a long time on the international stage. Mm-hmm. So it definitely feels like they're playing more of the long game and saying, we're okay with what we've got for now. And the person we want us to lead us at the World Cup will ultimately figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's Brazil. Samba, samba. So we will move to Chile next.
Now it gets interesting.
it gets very interesting. It does. Because so Chile obviously did not qualify for the last World Cup. And in the squad that they've called in, a lot of the old guard is still around. And by that, I mean Alexis Sanchez, right?
Arturo squad.
What's that?
Vidal's in the squad. Aaron Gies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they seem to just really, really be struggling to drop some of these players.
Yeah.
Which, okay, fair play. I mean, these are world class or once world class players, right? Yeah. I guess one player in particular that I wanted to focus on, who I do think is coming through and who could be the future of this team, is a player by the name of Dario Osorio. And he just made a move to Midtjylland over the summer. He was playing at Universidad de Chile, which is one of the powerhouses in Chile in terms of clubs. And so my eyes will be on him to see, what he can do. But yeah, it's kind of a weird mix. Like I'm still trying to get a read on this squad. Like it's not, there's still a lot of older players, but there's also a lot of younger players too. But those younger players are not playing at a level that I think is high. And I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
They're playing domestically. No, yeah. Sorry. I was just gonna say they're playing in their domestic league in Chile.
Yeah. I feel like it's like Groundhog Day with chili. Like, it feels like every time we talk about this squad, we're having the exact same conversation about the lack of young players coming through, the older players still hanging around, and it's just the same conversation. And at some point, which I thought that point had already passed, but it apparently is not. Vidal will not be there. Aaron Gies will not be there. Alexis Sanchez will not be there. Gary Medel will not be there. And then what happens? What does Chile look like? And I think if you look at this squad and you take away those four players, just you look at the rest of the squad and just take away those four players. Sanchez is 34, Vidal is 36, Aaron Gies is 34, Medel is 36. I don't think the team looks very good, frankly. And it almost feels like they're keeping those guys around just to kind of hold on to some quality. Mm-hmm. But I remain concerned for Chile in the future. I think Ben Brereton is probably one of the few, if not the only player that's kind of emerged as a potential future star or something close to that for Chile. But I think if you take away those four players, I am worried about Chile and how long they can hang on to this older generation without turning the page. And I almost feel like they want to, but they just don't know which players to turn to.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely an aspect of unknown with this team at the moment. And yeah, it's really hard to predict, right? I mean, you've got a few other players, right? Like Marcelino Nunez, he's played several times, especially during the last cycle for Chile, right? So he's got a lot of experience now. He's playing in England for Norwich City. But then you have another player like Felipe Mendez, right, who hasn't played as often for Chile yet, but he's playing in Russia. And I mean, at the moment, given everything that's gone on, you know, what is the quality like,
right,
you know, in the Russian Premier League? We don't really know if we're being honest. So,
yeah,
just lots of unknowns for Chile. And it will be fascinating to see what they end up doing.
I think they're a team that even with the six automatic qualifiers and the seventh place team reaching the playoffs, I think they're a team that's at risk of not even finishing in that top seven, to be honest. I am very concerned about Chile.
Yeah. And rightly so, right? As we just discussed. So, all right, we'll leave them there. Unless you had anything else you wanted to mention.
No, let's go to Colombia.
Right, Colombia is next. So Colombia, probably the best roster announcement video that I saw this window. Absolutely fantastic, bringing in some salsa music, and it was class. James is back. No Falcao, no Ospina. So two of kind of the stalwarts that we've come to know when you mentioned Colombia are not there anymore. New cycle, some fresh faces. But one face who is fresh, but is not necessarily fresh in age in terms of soccer, is John Córdoba. And it blew my mind when I was looking through this squad. I could not believe that he had never been capped by Colombia before.
I'm looking at the squad, and I'm also shocked that he had never been capped.
Yeah. So he's also playing in Russia, but I remember his days at Cologne in Germany. He's a very able goal scorer. And for Colombia, who missed out on the World Cup, you know, if he's 30 now, if you take a 26-year-old John Córdoba, you can't tell me that he couldn't have made a difference for Colombia in some sort of form or fashion, right? So
I would agree with you.
but another player for Colombia that I would focus on And the reason why I'm picking these two out is because A, they're fresh faces, and B, everybody else in the squad is pretty much the same as you know, we kind of had this last cycle. So there's not, you know, it's the familiar faces that everybody's used to. Is Richard Rios. He's 23 years old. He's center mid. He plays for Palmeiras in Brazil. And from what I've been able to gather, very exciting player, very exciting prospect. He's playing regularly at Palmeiras. A move to Europe probably is not far off. He's doing well in Copa Libertadores for them. And so, yeah, that's definitely a name for people to look out for with this Colombia team.
I was definitely disappointed in Colombia's World Cup qualifying. They're a team that it seems like, with the exception of some of their World Cup qualifying matches, have performed very well. You look at back at their schedule. They defeated Germany, Japan. They drew with the United States, with South Korea. Defeated Mexico recently. Defeated Guatemala and Paraguay. I mean, they have a lot of talent on their roster. I think they're a team for me that I look at, and I think with this change, particularly of the six direct qualifiers and seven playoff teams, I would be really surprised if a team with as much talent as Colombia misses out on the World Cup again. I think there's just they just have too many players in my mind that are quality enough. You know, they may not finish first, second, or third overall on the table, but I would be really surprised to see them miss out again on the World Cup.
Yeah, so I absolutely agree. I think one of the reasons why Cordoba was brought in is because they're trying to break the number of draws that they get in qualifying time around. And you know, they'll face a little bit of a stern task with that. I think they have Colombia, or they have Venezuela at home in the first match this round, and then they go away to Chile, which I think are two winnable games for Colombia. And I think if they can get off on the right foot, I think that's a positive. I think that was one thing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember that last cycle they didn't get off on a very good start, and that seemed to hamper them.
Yeah, you don't want to be playing from behind, because then you can't bank on your draws. You need to go out and win, and it's a lot harder to win when you have to than it is to get a draw when you have to. So I'm expecting a better performance from Colombia this cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll be interested as well to see what John Duran can do, who's playing at Aston Villa, and you know, if he can, you know, make some noise as well. He's also another name I think that people should watch out for too. So yeah, I think the horizon is maybe brighter for Colombia than it has been in the last 4 years.
Yeah,
and I think they stand a good chance of getting back to the big stage. So
agreed.
Good. Right. Let's head down to or over to the equator, to Ecuador. I don't know if that makes sense, but anyways, Ecuador is this team is exciting to me. You know, they made the World Cup in Qatar. They were a fun team to watch. Yes. And for me, that really hasn't changed a lot. In fact, I think it's gotten better. One name that has been included for the first time for Ecuador is Joel Ordóñez. I'll get it right. And he's only 19, and he's playing very well at Club Brugge in Belgium. And I think, again, that's a name for people to watch. I would also mention that Ecuador has a 16-year-old kid in their squad, which just, again, blows my mind. We, you know, we talk about Cordoba, who's 30, but at the other end of the spectrum, Ecuador is bringing in 16-year-olds. And his name is Kendry Paez, and he plays at Independiente del Valle, which is they're a smaller club, but they have actually grown into being quite a well-known club for developing talent, and they've become quite a powerhouse in Ecuador in recent years. And this isn't his first call up. This is his second call up. But you know, I think that can only be positive if, you know, if obviously if the coaching staff feels like he's ready for this stage, you know, he's getting so much experience and he's learning so much at this point. He's definitely going to be a player that I think if all goes well and his career continues to progress, Ecuador will be utilizing for quite some time, obviously. And then the only other name I would mention, sorry, and then I'll let you speak, but is Kevin Rodriguez. So he just moved to Union Saint-Gallois in Belgium, and he's been capped by Ecuador before, but I think that's a good step for him. Union was, I believe they were in Champions League qualification, if I'm not mistaken. I think they got knocked out, and I think they're playing Europa League this upcoming season.
They're definitely in Europe.
They're going to be a challenger for the title in Belgium, and I think he'll provide some depth to Ener Valencia up top.
Yeah, so I am looking forward especially to seeing Kevin Rodriguez. I like Ecuador. I thought were one of the most exciting teams at the World Cup. Really enjoyed their matches. So my only concern with Ecuador, which is maybe a bit unfounded, is Ener Valencia is their man. He is, you know, you need goals. He is the guy that is going to score goals for Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And it is few and far between when someone other than Ener Valencia scores goals for them.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And you look back at the World Cup and they defeated Qatar 2-0, two goals by Ener Valencia. They drew Netherlands 1-1, goal by Ener Valencia. They did get a goal from someone other than Ener Valencia against Senegal. But, you know, he is 33. He's going to be 34. By the time the World Cup rolls around, he's going to be almost 37 years old.
Yeah.
And I am a little concerned that they haven't found another goal scorer yet. And that's something I'm really going to be looking forward to seeing with Ecuador. I think they should be good enough to qualify. I'm not expecting them to fall out of that top group of teams, but Ecuador is not a team that to me feels like it's going to be easy to qualify. I think they're going to struggle a bit, and I really think they need to find some goals from someone other than Ener Valencia.
Yeah,
so I
think
that I might be a little less optimistic on Ecuador than maybe some others.
No, I think it's fair, and I think I think they're a little thin up top in particular, right? They do rely a lot on Ener Valencia, and I think that's where Kevin Rodriguez is going to come in. If he can really hit stride in Europe and improve his game there, and then translate that down to obviously to the Ecuador team, I think that's going to be huge for them. But yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, there's only three forwards in the squad. Then there's eight midfielders, and then the rest are defenders and goalkeepers, right? So they're a little thin.
Yeah, but that's their game. Don't concede.
That's true. That is their game, and they do rely a lot on wide players, with the wide pacey players, right? We know that as well, and players who are very crafty in the middle, right? Yes. That's also, you know, they look to fly down the wings and counter attack you, and so. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that is definitely something to keep an eye on and see if they really do struggle as you're suggesting, because I think you're onto something there.
I am excited to talk about this next team, which has not. So that next team is Paraguay.
And that is.
They've been outside of the World Cup for quite some time, and in the 2022 World Cup qualifying, they didn't do too well. And by not doing too well, I mean they barely finished above Bolivia with 16 points in 18 matches. They were not close to qualifying. But I think with this change, I think Paraguay could be in play. So, do you see anything changing with this squad that may indicate they're doing a little better, or they have new players coming that are gonna turn the tide for this team?
I do. And before I launch into that, I just so Paraguay kicks off at home to Peru, which that's gonna be a very good game.
Yes.
I'm gonna attempt to tune into that one for sure. And then they are away to Venezuela, which I also think
Yeah.
is a manageable game,
Yes.
for them as well. And while I'm there, we'll just backtrack for just a second. So Ecuador, they are away to Argentina to start things off, and then they host Uruguay. So, going back to what you're saying, right? Like, can they find goals in those games? Like, that's going to be tough.
Yes.
And that could be, as we mentioned with Chile, I think it was Chile. We said that, they didn't get off to a great start, right? To their qualifying campaign last cycle. So for Ecuador, might be similar. But anyways, going back to Paraguay, yeah, this is they've come leaps and bounds in one cycle. So I think one of their star players for sure is Julio Enciso. He's obviously injured. I think he's out for the rest of the season with Brighton there. So obviously he wasn't called into Paraguay, but they do have some quality, right? Almirón, who's playing for Newcastle obviously playing in Champions League. Riveros, who just moved. Funny enough, so Blas Riveros, he was playing at Brøndby in Denmark, but he, I guess, fell out of favor in the squad, and he's back in Argentina with Talleres. So with no Enciso, they're going to rely on some others to do the job, which is going to be interesting. Enciso is a vital part of that team, and I don't know if that's who you're going to talk about, but I guess I would mention finally one other player to keep an eye out on for Paraguay is Enzo Gonzalez. He just sealed a move last week to Wolves. From Libertad is obviously a one of the three big players in the Paraguayan league, and he was supposed to get his debut call up this window, but either I'm not sure who it was, but either the club or the player requested actually that he not get the call up so that he could acquiesce to life in the Premier League and at Wolves, and so he's a quality player, though. I've watched him in Libertadores on several occasions, and he's a player that I think people can get really excited for.
Yeah, it's remarkable to talk about Enciso, who is 19 years old, and basically say this key piece from Paraguay is missing. But he's that important to the squad. And so I think once he is back, whenever that may be, which it appears is not going to be anytime soon, but given the length of qualifying, he might miss the first half of qualifying, or maybe even a little less. I think Paraguay is going to be tough. I think they're probably, looking at the roster, one of the bottom three teams in CONMEBOL, but I also feel like Chile isn't that strong, and they only need maybe one or two other teams to not perform at their best to sneak in. So I'm really curious to see what Paraguay does if they finally start making some noise again in CONMEBOL, because it's been quite some time. And it's, Paraguay used to be good. They made four World Cups in a row. They were at 98, 02, 06, and 2010. So Paraguay has been there, and they've had the talent come through, and it's just a matter of when they get back, because the last three World Cup qualifying campaigns have not been good. So I'm very curious to see if Paraguay starts to move up a little bit, or they still kind of hold where they've been.
Yeah. I think, too, another player I might highlight as well is Diego Gomez. I've heard a lot of talk about him. He's playing at Inter Miami with Messi, and he's holding his own quite well. In fact, I think Messi's had high praise for him in recent matches. Going back to what you were saying, I think this Paraguay team is capable. I think Enciso is going to be key to their qualification campaign, because what he does is he makes them multidimensional, right? At the moment, you look through this squad and you're kind of like, okay, like Miguel Almirón, obviously he's going to be the key playmaker. Yep. Everything's going to run through him, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And that's somewhat easy to shut down, right? And so they need some other players to come in and step up, right? There's a lot of players in this squad. Excuse me. There's a lot of players in the squad that I don't want to say they're old. I guess you could say they're in their prime. Mm-hmm. But the number of players that I'm seeing that are 29, 30 or yeah. older, right? That is a little bit of a concern to me. There's four of them, almost half of their defense is age 30 or older, right? And that can be good because you have a lot of experience. That can also be bad because you lack some speed, right? And when you're going up against, you know, some of these other players from other countries that we've talked about, it can be a disservice to you sometimes. So, I'm really not sure where Paraguay is going to end up. I like their chances in this cycle, but I do tend to agree with you. I think theoretically they could fall in that bottom three. It's going to be close for them, I think.
Yes, I agree. So. I'm excited to talk about this next team as well, that I feel like is kind of in that same boat in Peru, where you talk about that bottom three that's going to miss out. I might be the least optimistic person out there about Peru, which pains me to say, but I feel like Peru is really struggling, and I'm concerned that, and maybe Peru's got just enough where they do enough to beat out some of those other teams, but Peru for me definitely feels like a team that is more towards the bottom tier in CONMEBOL than kind of the middle-ish tier of CONMEBOL. But what do you think about Peru?
Yeah, I tend to agree. They're still really reliant on an almost 40-year-old player in Paulo Guerrero, which I think speaks volumes to them at the moment.
They're old. They're an old squad.
Yeah. Yeah, they absolutely are. And I think we haven't really seen them bleed a lot of players in. And this is where what we were talking about with Argentina and Brazil and Ecuador, where a lot of those squads are still intact from the last cycle. Well, it's still intact for this squad and for Peru in this cycle, but it's not necessarily a positive.
Yeah.
So I guess I would highlight Sergio Pena. He's playing well at Malmo. He's 27, so by the time the World Cup comes around, he'll be 30. He'll be 30, almost 31. Outside of that, I think maybe Renato Tapia might be a player to look at. He's obviously been a staple for Peru for a long time, and he's now playing at Celta Vigo in Spain. But I mean, a lot of these other names, honestly, they're familiar, but I especially on their forward line, right? It looks like they're attempting to bring in some youth to try to find the next Paulo Guerrero. Right. But the issue with that is, you know, these players are not necessarily playing at a high level. right? The yes. the league in Peru is it tends to struggle. So yeah, I
think you make a great point in terms of same players. Is it a good thing? And Peru's a team that we were excited about towards the back of 2022 World Cup qualifying, when we were not sure, are they going to make it? Are they not going to make it? They're in the race with Uruguay. They're in. And then they made it to the Interconfederation playoffs, and they ultimately lost and didn't, you know, in that ridiculous penalty shootout to Australia.
Yeah.
But they were they kind of faded over qualifying. And that's not, you know, if you're bringing back the same team and they're just older and they were already old in the last qualifying window.
Yeah.
I don't really think that's a good thing for Peru. So
yeah.
I'm a little concerned about them because, you know, typically you and I will look through these rosters and we'll look for similar things. Who's young? Who's playing in Europe? Who's got a combination of those two things? I'm not seeing anybody, right? Like they have Marcos Lopez, left back at Feyenoord.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, he's solid.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a superstar. I think he's solid.
Yeah.
But then use that same criteria. Who's playing in Europe? Who's reasonably young? And there's nobody else. So I'm definitely concerned about Peru. And to your point, I think playing in South America is okay. That's not a bad thing. But if the Peruvian league is not the strongest, and if that's where all your young players currently are, that makes me concerned. So I'm feeling like Peru is one of those teams that could be at risk for dropping down.
Yeah, and I think they are going to start off on not the greatest foot. I think, obviously, we already mentioned Paraguay and Peru are playing each other. Peru away, which historically, I don't think they've performed that well away from home.
Yes.
And then they're at home to Brazil, and that seems unlikely. You know, you never know. You never want to say they're going to lose that game, but on paper, it doesn't look too promising.
They could start their first two matches with 0 points. So
yeah,
I don't think that's totally unrealistic at all.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, with Peru, I just don't know where they're going. And I guess one positive you might be able to take is it does, you know, there is an uptick in the number of players who are playing in Major League Soccer. And I do think that in a lot of ways, Major League Soccer is a step up from the Peruvian League. I think one thing that the Peruvian League has that Major League Soccer doesn't is Libertadores,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're seeing in this team, you're seeing a lot of Peruvian players who are playing for teams that do, you know, they're either in the qualifiers or they make the group stage of Libertadores, right? Which gives them some really good opportunities to play some quality games and some quality opposition. But, you know, I think it can be taken as a positive that you're seeing Peruvian players leave Peru and go to MLS, which I think is a step up. And so I think in a sense, I think that's positive. So,
yeah.
Just thought I'd throw that out there as well before we move on to the next team, which is Uruguay. And so they've annoyed the heck out of me this window, and I'm wearing my Uruguay kit as we record this because I'm actually really, really interested to see how this team sets up with Bielsa, who was announced as their manager. I don't know if we talked about that in the last episode or not, or if that happened since we last recorded.
I think that's happened since we last recorded.
But it's gonna be absolutely insane. And they were, if you follow us on social media, you know, we've been tweeting out rosters and tips and players to watch and things like that for like the last week. And I'm sitting here and I'm waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. Like, where's the Uruguay roster? Like, what is taking them so long? And it was like Friday, and I was like watching all the other rosters come in, and no Uruguay. It came out this morning.
Yeah.
This morning.
And they're playing in 4 days.
They're playing in 4 days. I mean, obviously they knew who was getting the call in, right? Players started arriving yesterday. And so what I'm thinking is, I think this is a mental thing. I think this is a mental Bielsa game that he's playing with the other countries in South America, right? So they kick things off at home against Chile. I think that's a winnable game for them. Yeah. Then they go to Ecuador. I think that's going to be a little more tricky. But I think it could be a winnable game for them as well. And yeah, I mean, look, Bielsa only plays really one style, right? And that is go, 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 right? Like, he did it at Leeds. He did it at all the places that he's managed, right? And so does Uruguay have the squad to be able to do that? Or is he going to run these guys into the ground? Like, that's...
I think it's interesting because... We talked about a number of these squads, Peru, Chile. Look at the ages on these players. Other than one goalkeeper, every single player is under the age of 30. Every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're forwards, 27, 23, 24, 23, 21, 24, 21.
Yep.
It's clear what he is doing.
Yep.
And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Uruguay. I think they're think doing what a lot of other teams would like to do, but don't have the talent to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to be really successful in this window. I think they're going to qualify pretty easily, actually.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's going to be exciting to watch. And if this works out like I'm thinking it will, or maybe even hoping it will, they could be a very exciting team to watch come 2026.
Absolutely.
They could really be playing with some real panache and some just exciting ball. So
yeah,
I mean, it's life without Suarez and life without Cavani. Neither of those two are called into the squad. And did Suarez retire? I don't know if he officially announced.
If he officially retired. Yeah. But there are a lot of names. I'm just looking at the names that have tons of caps for Uruguay. Suarez, Cavani, obviously, but no Vecino, no Torreira, no Bentancur, no Godin, no Cáceres, no Jimenez, no Muslera. It's a lot of different players. It's a lot of different players. And I just feel like that's something that is the right move for them at this point in time, because you want to be at your best in 2026. And if you've had these guys getting experience playing together and these are the guys you think are your long-term players, great. I think they have the luxury of being able to do that some other teams do not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you just mentioned it, but there's only one player on the squad that is age 30, and he's a goalkeeper. Everybody else is under 30.
And materially under. Like, it's not even close. The average age is probably 24 on this squad.
Yeah. And so I think it's really clear what Bielsa and probably the Uruguayan Federation wanted is youth. Right. Like they wanted. And it makes sense with the way that Bielsa plays. Right. Like you can't have 30-year-olds traveling to Bolivia, to La Paz, and playing his style of play.
Yes.
Are you concerned
about the back line at all?
Yeah. So I was just going to mention, I think that the defense situation. So what that means is that there's a young crop of defenders in the squad, right? And there's an okay amount of experience in there, right? You got Matias Vinha, Matias Oliveira, right? Those two are you know, they have a fair amount of caps underneath their belt, but a lot of these other players, you know, you're looking at 4-3-2-2-1 in terms of caps for the team. So I think that I think there's a chance that that could come back and bite them in the butt, because Ronald Araujo, who's playing at Barcelona, he was not called in. I think he's injured still.
I'm surprised by that. Yeah. To me, he's a guy. I think he's got to be injured. He would be there pretty much.
Yeah. And Josima's out. And then Sebastian Coates was not called in. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to the age piece, like Coates is going to be almost 36 by 2026. Right. Yeah. So
he's probably not going to be part of the squad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so I worry slightly about the defense, and obviously, you know, with the style that Bielsa plays, with that throwing everybody forward, you know, they're going to leave gaps at the back.
Yeah.
And so they're going to have defenders who can track back and cover ground quickly. And so I think that's something that people can look for in terms of, you know, weaknesses for Uruguay, more or less.
Do you think we're going to see the 3-3-3-1?
The 3-3-3-1? Yeah. I would not put it out of the question. You never know with him. So yeah. All right, the last team in CONMEBOL is Venezuela, and this is a team for me that is also a bit of a question mark. And I actually think, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think Venezuela has a decent shot at getting to 2026.
Yeah, I don't disagree, actually. And they were probably, for me, the biggest disappointment in 22 qualifying, because I thought they had a decent chance to qualify in 2022, and they did horrible. And I think they just started so poorly that they never really recovered from that. But they've got a decent amount of talent on the Venezuela squad.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. Solomon Rondon, a name that we're all very familiar with. You know, he's 33. He's playing at River Plate, but he's playing well there, and he's got the call back, right? Joseph Martinez, you and I are probably more familiar with him than maybe some others, right? Mm-hmm. He was at Atlanta United, and then now he's at Inter Miami. You know, looking through some other names, Yangel Herrera, right? He's a name that a lot of people think. He plays at Girona in Spain. I mean, there's definitely, I think they have a really good opportunity to qualify. I think one of the big questions in my head is their coach, Fernando Batista. He has never been a head coach before. This is his first head coaching position. So can he, you know, does he have the magic key, right? can he get them there? As we were just mentioning, this squad is a very mixed bag. Like, there's lots of domestic players, but then there's plenty of international experience as well. And I really feel strongly that if they're going to qualify, they have to come together like quickly, and they really have to get off on the right foot. They face Colombia away to start things off. That's a really tricky tie, but I think they could get a point out of that. I do. Mm-hmm. And then they're home to Paraguay, which is, as we just discussed, is also a tricky tie.
Yeah. I think it's manageable, their starting schedule, and they're playing reasonably well. Like, they haven't lost since last September, almost a full calendar year. Now, they haven't played phenomenal opposition. They've played UAE, Panama, Syria, Saudi Arabia, a lot of Asian competition. They've beat Honduras and Guatemala in June. But I feel like Venezuela is talented enough. And again, especially with the way that the schedule is, or I'm sorry, the qualifying is laid out with the top six and then the seventh place team making the playoffs. Venezuela, to me, feels like a team that should be good enough to threaten that threshold. and they've got talent. They really, like, looking at their roster, I think they're more talented than Bolivia. I think they're more talented probably than Paraguay. And I would even argue Peru and probably Chile. I think they're probably more talented than. So in my mind, I feel like they should be threatening to qualify for the World Cup. Yeah. And they haven't ever. That is one thing they have never done, is Venezuela has never, ever, ever qualified for the World Cup, which is remarkable. I think this could be their time to break through. I'm a big fan of Joseph Martinez. I'm a big fan of Jose Martinez, who's at Philadelphia Union, El Brujo. and I think they have players that are good enough that they really should be threatening to qualify.
Yeah, I agree. One player who is not in the squad because he's injured is the goalkeeper, their starting goalkeeper, Wilker Fariñas. Mm-hmm. And so I think, well, I'm hoping that that's not a huge loss for them, and that one of these other goalkeepers can really step up. But yeah, just wanted to make sure we made a note of that as well, that he's not going to be there this window. So
that is unfortunate. And Venezuela, I think that's an area that I think at the back, Venezuela is not super strong.
Yeah.
And I think the last World Cup qualifying, I really feel like they started too slow and then just got lost in the mix and just didn't give full effort. But I also, if I'm remembering correctly, I think Joseph Martinez was injured for maybe the first five or six matches of World Cup qualifying. I don't believe he played in many of those qualifying matches. Mm-hmm. I think having him is going to be a big boost to them. To have him and Solomon Rondon and what feels like mostly a full strength squad at this point.
Yeah.
I think I'm very curious to see if they can get off to a better start than they did the last World Cup qualifying campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Maybe one last name I might throw in there is Kevin Kelsey. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's playing at Shakhtar Donetsk. And he's only 19 years old. He's a forward, and he could be somebody that this cycle might emerge for Venezuela. He's not in the squad this time around. I'm not sure why, but perhaps a name to watch out for. So,
All right.
There we go. World Cup qualifying kicking off in South America this week. We're excited, if you can't tell, and we're ready to rock again. So
yeah, lot to watch for in CONMEBOL, and now that we're kind of coming out of talking about it, I am certain there will be drama.
Yeah, there will be drama.